Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
I remember walking around the court square sidewalks, looking in windows, things I couldn't want. There's Johnson's Hardware.
All right, joining me today are Tim Lynch. Tim, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Mac. Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year, man. And Jeff Kenny, I think, is with us as well. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Mac. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you? Yeah, Happy New Year. What you guys been doing over the holiday, Timmy? Anything exciting?
Not a darn thing exciting. Went to the mall and I watched football while Rebecca did some shopping. That was the highlight of the day. No. I sit there and watch football.
Well, it depends on what you're watching. Who'd you watch?
It was 12 o'clock, the first two games yesterday. They were good, too. God dang. I keep on wanting to say Oregon, but that was later in the day.
No, that was later in Rose Bowl.
It was Minnesota and Auburn, wasn't it?
Yeah, Minnesota-Auburn. Minnesota got a football team for once. So
yeah, that was a hell of a fun game to watch. That's what I was sitting there watching.
All right. Jeff, what about you?
Well, we spent Christmas on the beach in a cottage with all the California kids. And then on the 26th, I flew to Colorado Springs, and then down to Canyon City to hook up with the two Colorado kids, and then one of my other boy from who works in South Carolina had driven out there a couple days before, and I just got back from that day before yesterday. So this is all good, fun.
A lot of Christmas for you, then, man. You're like spreading Christmas cheer everywhere.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. My two of my boys got into a brawl in Canyon City with some bikers. I was already in REM 7 in my hotel, but they did good. So they were high for the rest of the 3 days that they were together there, so that was good.
So did they fight each other or other guys?
No, for once they didn't fight each other. They fought these biker dudes who were kind of Bogarting the owner of the bar, and it was pretty – so they both had identical, like, black eyes and scratches on their heads and stuff, and But they dispersed these guys, and the cops came and declared them the winners. So,
well, that's all that matters. At the end of the day, that's all that matters. I wanted to, obviously, I mean, fortuitous timing, the events in Baghdad. And we've been talking about this. Jeff brought this up months ago. I mean, hell, probably close to a year ago. The risk that the United States was assuming with our whether it be our quote unquote contractors or whether it be our advisors who are, you know, advising and training Iraqi security forces. Jeff, lay that out for everybody.
Well, there's a significant number of advisory task forces spread across Iraq. The Marines have one in Anbar province called Task Force Now. It's called Task Force Anbar. And these are about anywhere from 70 to 100 folks. It's like a staff. And actually, it could even be less than that. And they help the Iraqis with ISR and sometimes fires. But as time goes on, there's less and less of that. And they also advise the usually on the core level. So, like, for instance, in Anbar, they're advising a core that covers Anbar that's actually three divisions, two reinforced divisions of Iraqis who are taking care of Anbar in regards to ISIS. And the army has efforts going on, like places to the north of there and up in Al-Assad and over in Al-Qaim and, of course, back towards Diyala and all those, the traditional hotspots. And so they're not really very well. They can't really defend themselves. They're more like a staff, but they're protected, at least in the case of the Marines, by Marines, infantry Marines from Camp Pendleton, who are deployed to Kuwait.
Okay, so when you say protected, How do we mean protected? They're not. They're protecting. They're an overwatch in Kuwait, right? To be able to respond as a QRF, quick reaction force.
There's that, but day to day, they are protected by like at least a company there at the in the Takadam
of Marines.
And then there's also of Marines, yes.
Okay.
And there's also Marines protecting efforts in Syria and other parts of, and they're in the embassy. Traditional embassy, they're not embassy. There are embassy duty Marines there. There may be some Fast Company guys. I'm not sure about that. You know, the Fleet Anti-Terrorist Support Team, and then there's also grunts.
Hold on,
let's talk about.
So you have Marines that you know do what Jeff did. You know, embassy guarding around the world, right? And that's kind of one of the traditional roles and missions of the Marine Corps.
Right.
Now, Marine Corps, what, back in the 80s stood up, or the 90s stood up fast companies to be able to rapidly deploy to installations and reinforce them, be they embassies or bases. Jeff, can you explain to everybody a little bit what fast company does?
Yeah, it depends on the type of emergency in the country in question. So if the country in question still has a functioning government that support the United States, but yet it's highly dangerous in regards to street fighting and fighting in proximity to the embassy, they'll send in fast company, usually 55-man reinforced platoons, into the country. They'll land under the auspices of the home government, be transported to the embassy, and they will reinforce the Marine security guards who are working for the State Department to protect mainly classified material. These guys are there, though, when things are dicey. When the government doesn't have control, like in the case of Liberia in 1990 and 1996, they'll use deployed Marines in the case of a lot of cases it's off the Mew. But now, because of the dearth of amphibious shipping, we have Special Purpose MAGTAFs, which are located in key areas in the Mediterranean area and in the Gulf, and they will deploy to protect areas that are under duress. Like they should have probably done something like that in Benghazi, you know, in 2012.
Right.
For whatever reason, they didn't. Now, the thing in Iraq and Afghanistan, the government is in control, but we know it's contested. So consequently, there's you know, the fast guys and guys from Special Forces MAGTAF, you know, who beef up security there in the areas for the various efforts that are going on. So that's what you got. And the Army does similar things with their guys in Iraq and Afghanistan. So there's... you know, there's a lot of security that are in there protecting the advisory effort. And so I think what happened when this thing happened clearly inspired civil unrest directed at the embassy here over the last few days. They beefed them up, and they beefed them up fast because they're always leaning forward into it. There's already guys in there, like the Marines you saw on TV, looking over the top of the embassy. They're like kind of like crusader forts, you know what I mean? And so they're already there, so you know they can be rapidly put in. It's a mature theater.
That's a technical term in case you don't know. It's a mature theater.
Yeah.
Lynch, knock it off, man! What the fuck? Hello?
Oh, I muted my microphone. I was just checking to see if it was muted or not.
Oh, it's not. Trust me.
Sorry.
All right.
I'll mute it again while you finish up.
You think? What the holy shit, man? Jeff, explain mature theater.
Well, there's a lot of there's secure airfields in there, down there in the. Off the Gulf, the port is secure there by Basra, and that's what I mean when I say mature. We can get in and out of there without having to fight our way in and out.
Got it. All right. So,
how it's been since 2003.
You can contrast that with like Somalia, where every step you're going to take is it would be defined as an immature, non-functional theater where every step you take in that thing, you're gonna you should assume you'll fight your way there. So anyway, all right. I want to talk. Timmy did security inside the green zone. So Timmy had some discussions with his dad over the weekend. So I want to kind of broaden the lens and talk about Iran in Lebanon, Iran in Iraq, Iran inside of Iran. I want to loop the attack on the refinery, the lack of an American response, and talk about the choreography of what we saw over the weekend and where the United States is. But Tim, you worked in Baghdad, right, inside the green zone. In what years?
2004.
Tell us about it. I've never been there.
Well, it's not what you see now. The green zone was a pretty sizable area, and the embassy was located in the same building where the CPA had been. So I was with a British outfit called Global. Within the green zone were a lot of other security companies who had contracts. We had probably 400 Nepalese who manned the perimeter, all the guard towers along the river and whatnot. That actually was my area of responsibility. And then we broke them into four companies, and each company had two expat training officers, and you had a staff. I think that's morphed now. There's probably 300, 350 armed contractors in that embassy right now, and I believe Triple Canopy has the contract. But back then it was a sizable effort, but it would have been a goat rope had they tried to conduct a coordinated defense, because there was, layered inside of our perimeter were Marines. They had a Marine Corps detachment that was on the interior portion that controlled traffic towards and away from the embassy. And you had Blackwater was in there with all kinds of dudes. It would have been impossible to coordinate any kind of defensive action back then. For our problem was always rockets. They got to be quite a nuisance.
All right, so you just mentioned the private contracting side, normally done through the State Department. Is that still around, Jeff? You know?
Oh yeah. There's a contract. They got a contract there, and those guys, those guys are obviously augmenting the Marines.
That's right. Yeah, there's people both in Afghanistan and Iraq doing, like what Timmy was doing. I can't remember the nationality. They're from an African country, who. We're doing stuff to augment the guys at in what used to be Leatherneck, Shorab, and they had American and I think British contractors who were kind of honchoing them.
All right, and what those guys do is they do all the escorting of the diplomats, armed escorting, right around, and that's when I would see them the most. They were coming out to Fallujah or something, right, and these guys. And that's how some of these incidents happened. These guys were escorting diplomats around the area of operation, and you've seen some of the trials and some of the stuff that has gone on because of it. And to include in 2004, those were Blackwater people that got ambushed and then burned to death and then hung from the bridge in Fallujah. And so anyway, all right, let's broaden the lens now. Let's step back. Timmy, you were having some discussions with your dad, retired Major General Jarvis Lynch, about all of this. What did your dad have to say?
Well, he was most disappointed. He takes the same view that Jeff does about the arson and general unrest. That they didn't bust some caps into their protesters to drive them off, and it appeared to me that aside from the CS, I kept on seeing things going pop, pop, pop. I think those are pepper balls, and I think they were hosing them down with those damn pepper ball rounds. And that's like when you shot Mick Popovich in the butt with that simunition. I mean, that stuff hurts. I told the old man, I said that's not anything to be taken lightly. What I liked. And what he also liked was immediately you withdraw the ambassador, which I've never seen done. They take all the noncombatants out, put in 100 Marines, and say, all right, guys, I believe you call that a checkmate. And I'm not too sure the Iranians were expecting us to react that decisively and that quickly. But we did, and it's pretty impressive, because now what are they going to do? And it looks like they've got reinforcement for those. I think it was the 8 that Jeff said, those advisory teams. I think those guys are about to get hardened. And there's even more people coming in, and maybe, just maybe, we're starting to pay attention to the Shia guys, which is what started this. Because once you killed al-Baghdadi and the ISIS guys, apparently the special forces have turned their hungry gaze to the Shia militias who have been operating in a rogue fashion. And they smacked one, and they may well be prepping to go in and smack more of them, because Iran has always used proxies. It's always worked for them. They drove us out of Beirut like that. They took the embassy in Tehran like that, and this time it didn't play out that way. And I don't know if they anticipated that, but it sure looks like we're driving the action. They're reacting to us, not vice versa.
Hmm. Yeah, I remember a couple weeks ago, the Iranian Shias were demonstrating in a lot of violence against the Iraqi government because of the rampant, distrust and resentment over the presence of these Shia-based militias who are Iranian influenced. Remember, that was a pretty big deal a couple weeks ago, a month ago or so. And now this happens. I mean, they walk right into the embassy. The Iraqi security forces let them walk right through. So it's a dicey situation, definitely.
Yeah, and I don't. If you play action, reaction, counteraction like planners do, I don't know. Like, so what's Iran's problem? They can't get a reaction out of the great Satan to distract, right, their the people they control from Lebanon, who I'm not sure give a shit about Iraq, but certainly the Iraqis or their own internal consumption inside of Iran, where they continue to have demonstrations. Supposedly right before Christmas they killed another 200 people during demonstrations. So what's, again, like we talked about with the oil refineries, what's the point of this? What audience does this play to? To me, in watching it, it plays to the internal audience and the audience of the, in Tehran, in Iran, in Iraq, certainly, and maybe trying to, like, fire up the flames of the great Satan. So do you think, I don't think they care. In fact, I would expect that they would say, go get over the wall, just to have the video of innocent protesters being murdered by Americans. I mean, why would Tehran give a shit about that? I mean, when they shot the missiles at a base that they knew held Americans, and they, what was the intention there? To kill Americans. So what did they expect the reaction to be? Nothing? Oh, they'll just put their hands in their pockets? They're probing, right? They keep poking the bear to get the reaction that they're looking for so that they can change the narrative of being strangled by this economic, thing that they have on them because of their nuclear ambitions that Europe won't rescue them from right now. So
it's
go ahead.
I think you're right. I think you're right, Mac. I think they're playing to their own audience there in Iran. And a similar thing happened when they took the hostages in November of 1979 from the embassy. And then it took a long time before President Carter finally froze all their assets. That hurt them. Right. Sanctions went on there. That hurt them. And then a little bit later, after the failed rescue attempt, the Iraqis invaded Iran, and that became intolerable pressure to them, and that's what led to the hostages being released. There's the situation they have now is the sanctions are hurting them. They have more interest, globally, especially in the global area of the Central Asia and the Middle East, that they got a lot of fingers in different pies, and the sanctions are making those support for those efforts problematic. And so consequently, it's really hurting. And so they're going back to the old playbook, in my view, of screwing with the embassy is supposed to be sacrosanct.
Right.
And how they've pulled their chestnuts out of the fire is ignoring the sacrosanct nature of diplomatic missions and violating that. And then because it's all on the stage of, you know, they can, you know, you get people lined up on one side or another. And even in America, you're going to have, it's inevitable in an election year, that people are going to say what's happened over there is a result of the current administration's bad judgment, and people who reform are going to compare this to disasters that happened during Democratic administrations and say this is a better use of our resources than the Democrats did. And so there's several stages that this play is right. being put on for several different audiences, I think.
All right. Timmy?
Well, I go once again to wondering who's making the decisions, what their information on our current situation with our president is. You know, I know they've got plenty of people here. They've got to come up with some kind of estimate about how Trump's going to react.
Well, okay, so let me, I think I'll give you, the IRGC is making this decision. Right.
Right. But who knows what they're believing as far as Trump goes? He loses all of his generals. He seems to be impetuous. He launches an attack and calls it back. I don't think they were anticipating this because this was a definitive reaction that looks like it's going to reinforce.
Yeah, but
all
don't you think that's what they want, though? I do.
Well, they want a war, a shooting war for sure. And Jeff is absolutely right. You know, they closed the kimono on their population with the internet and whatnot, but you still got the BBC and the Voice of America broadcasting there in all the local dialects, and so that you're not fooling anybody. This was a humongous, I think, humiliating defeat for Iran because they can't trust their proxies to follow through. I guarantee the IRG, the Republican Guard guys, they were all for investing that thing and getting some footage of people getting shot. And our less than lethal capability is so much better than it was back in the 70s and 80s. We can make it very painful.
I'd be curious to see, you know, do you remember when Franz Geil had his sonic wave shit and almost killed Freddy?
Franz Geil was a inventive dude, man. He was just drawing circles all the time.
He was. Yeah. When we're all instructors together, we're at the basic school, and one day Paul Kennedy, who's a retired major general recently, he comes back. He goes, "Buddy, you won't believe what happened to me today." And I said, "What?" He said, "Well, I saw Franz Geil." And I said, "Yeah." Now, Franz is like an inventor. He's like a no-shit inventor. But he's an infantry officer captain like the rest of us. But he's not like the rest of us, okay? He's a little bit different, as inventors are. So he said, Guile's got this sonic, I can't remember the thing he's doing. And I said, yeah. He said, well, he took me down to the basement in Haywood Hall. I'm like, oh, this is not going to end well, man. And Let me show you this thing. Let me do it to you. He said, I'm not sure if he almost killed me. He said, but oh my God, man, it totally incapacitated me. I said, are you stupid? He goes, you know what, buddy? I think I might be. He said, but I was kind of curious what he had going. I said, so you became the chicken for Franz Geil? He goes, well, yes. I didn't really look at it like that, but you could probably say that. So this is Franz Geil.
Franz is an embassy duty Marine in Germany and another in Stuttgart when I was in Frankfurt. So we knew each other.
Really?
But yeah.
As Tim's talking about, that was kind of pretty crude stuff, right? I was thinking about this 2 days ago. I would be curious to see what kind of weapons those Marines have.
Directed energy.
Yeah, those Marines have directed energy, sonic energy, all that kind of stuff. That falls under that umbrella where you would see people fall down and become incapacitated, but then later get up and walk away.
Yeah, it makes your, like, make your tooth fillings if they have any go back up into their heads and stuff, and their hearing aids explode, and their, you know, who knows, man?
Exactly. All of that craziness would happen. But I don't know. I've not kept track of the non-lethal part of that stuff other than on what police forces could do and things like that, but pretty interesting stuff.
The non-lethal stuff that they can deploy, the noise, the high frequency stuff, it's very impressive. It's very classified too, but
I'd love to see it though. I would love for that to be the video, right, that goes out there. that, look, the Americans are defending their embassy because the Iraqis have stepped aside, and they're doing it in a less than lethal way. So now who's – because, again, I believe that the IRGC, the choreography, is hoping, praying, right, that the Americans mow down with firearms, you know, quote-unquote innocent protesters, you know, of this outrage. So I believe that's what – and so if you see it in the broader context of the sanctions, the restraint from the attack on the oil refinery, you know – what Jeff said in terms of the real dagger at the heart of Iran are those sanctions.
Yeah.
And so...
You know, the Iraqi government, I think the Iraqi government has voted to throw us out, or is in the process of doing that. The Iraqi government doesn't really speak, I don't think, for the... like so many of them don't. You know, the will of the people. Have you heard that?
I have not seen a headline like that.
I saw President Trump addressing this issue on in his New Year's tuxedo, and he made a point of thanking the Iraqi government for all the help that they're giving him to get this all squared away. Read into that what you may.
Yeah.
But there's no question they stepped aside and let that militia invest the place. I don't know what Trump is talking about, but you'd like to think that maybe they decided to side with the side who they think is going to ultimately win, because the more that we indicate that we're not sticking around and we're going to stay a while, I think the more human we get, the more people come basically decide not to toy around with us too much. I just hope that we go out there and thump some more of those Shia militia, because he's got the ass to do it now. The question is, is the juice worth his squeeze? We'll have to see.
Right.
If you remember, only I think about 10, 15 days ago, there's a joint exercise with the Iranians, the Russians, and the Chinese there outside of the Persian Gulf. And I think that, you know, that's another – that the Iranians are trying their best to play chicken. Not so much chicken, but, you know, one-upmanship.
Right.
Problem is, the sanctions we got, what they're hitting, are the pensions for all these dismembered dudes from the Iran-Iraq war, for people who've been in the Iranian, the guard system there for all the folks who've been loyal to the revolutionary government of Iran. They're really hurt. They're hurting. They're letting them hurt so they can keep up their nefarious activities on an international basis. And so I think this is a manifestation of that, just like the exercises were. You know, Chinese and Russians are uncomfortable because of us, despite what you hear in the news or what the Democrats are saying about the president being controlled by Putin. The fact is, Trump has probably killed more Russian proxies and stuff than any other president since ever.
Yeah.
And so those guys are uncomfortable, so they're willing to help around. But Iran is screaming in pain because of these sanctions.
Well, and you know what's interesting is that Russia, I mean, other than if we want to get into a nuclear war, is formidable, but beyond that, right?
Okay.
I mean, Russia, again, the economy smaller than that of Canada, right? Smaller than that of South Korea, and so it's like they just don't have, they can't do, right? China got to be very careful in the dance it walks, because China has seen that the United States economy is pretty robust, while their own is pretty fragile, and so you're seeing. You know, you're seeing more and more articles about the Chinese, you know, debt crisis that's looming, yada, 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 yada. So the Chinese have to walk a line like, well, we're willing to tweak the Americans, but that's about as far as this shit goes, okay? Because we, at the end of the day, we need them way more than we need you, the Iranians, because you're just a boil on everybody's ass, which we don't mind because we have North Korea as well, but... This stuff needs, right? It needs to stay, you know, between the left and right lateral limits. That's why to me, it's like, yeah, we're going to do this stuff off to the side, but we want no part of anything other nefarious that you're a part of. And Russia keeps its distance from them in the Middle East as well. So it's kind of interesting, but I think the whole choreography, the whole action, reaction, counteraction is shit, man. We blew up, like, all kinds of Saudi refining capabilities, and they didn't give us anything, right? Nothing to use against them. All right, so What's the next step? Well, we got to kill Americans. All right. Well, where do we find them? How do we get to them? And like they could, you know, they could give a shit about those militia guys, right? They don't give a shit, right? So
yeah, the thing with Iran and North Korea is like the old thing about the brothers. And what's the best thing you could say about Iran is that North Korea is worse.
Yeah.
You know, so that's how people across the world look at it. Yeah.
Right. Right. So they're sitting there in their planning cell saying, okay, look, we'll hit them, we'll kill or wound Americans, and then they'll have to respond. Okay, mm-hmm. Well, what do we expect their response would be? Well, they're going to unleash drone and aviation ordnance at some place. Well, what would the most likely targets be? And let me tell you, they're pretty good at thinking this stuff. Right?
Yeah.
They're pretty good at thinking this stuff. And so to me, you know, I hope that we have, you know, really what we need to do is, and again, here's another layer of this, right? One of the things that I learned in Iraq, right, in 2004 was if you're seeing it, it's because they want you to see it. It is not a fucking accident. There are no coincidences in that part of the world. Okay? And if you believe things are coincidences, then you're fucking stupid, okay? Because that's the way they do it. So the outrage and the statements of we need the Americans out is both predictable, right, and for them the right thing to say. Now, do you think anything becomes of that, Jeff?
No.
Yeah.
I think what happens is they tested us. And they and the robust response, and in regards to the insertion of extra security forces, and so I think there's not much going to come, you know, in regards to that. But they may have they may up the ante. There may be an attack on one of these task forces, and there may be a fight, and they'll use proxies, just like Tim said. It won't be, of course, Iranian. They'll be Iranians, but they won't be flagged as Iranian. You know, they'll be. These are just Anbaris who happen to be Shia. Oh, how did that happen? I don't know. It's a miracle.
Yeah,
but or I don't know if they'll attack. I don't know which one they'll attack. I don't know if they'll attack some of them or all of them or none of them. You know, but there'll be some violence. Things have changed a little bit. There's desperation. You know, and so the president keeps using our most potent weapon. You know, the sanctions and stuff like that. They're making them hurt. Everybody is answerable to their population in some degree or another, even totalitarian governments like Iran and China and to a certain extent Russia. They can only lie for so long. The bare facts of deprivation and suffering because you're not able to get what every other country can is going to speak volumes about the effectiveness of their government. And they know that. All of them know it. Even North Korea knows it, you know?
Hey, you know what else? What else to consider is with the Iranian, with Revolutionary Guard, and I think with the Chinese military, do not most of their senior generals have gigantic business interests? Isn't that part of the deal? Is they get control of large companies to also extract money?
Yes.
Right.
And that was one of the changes that came in what as after the Iran-Iraq war, because the IRGC had contributed so much, they wanted to find a way to, you know, keep them on the payroll, so they turned certain segments of the economy over to them. And so I didn't know that till, I don't know, a few months ago, that the business interests of the IRGC inside of Iran. Pretty interesting.
So as you're looking at the response from Iran, and we'll just assume it's a Revolutionary Guard, how adroit can they be when so many of them have business interests they've got to balance off against this because they've got to be getting wiped? I mean, we've got the Fat Leonard scandal, and we got guys risking a lifetime in jail for some hookers and blow. I mean. The serious money that's flowing around to fund all these things and whatnot, they've got to have a lot of slippage. They've got to have a high overhead, a high tolerance for graft. They have to, because that's how they operate. How do you control for that? Because they might be starting to get confused between what's in their strategic best interest militarily and what is in their bottom line best interest money-wise, because those guys are kind of attracted to money, it seems
Absolutely.
To me.
Well, I mean, to me, it's, you know, it's like the mandate of a politician. You know, What's Rule 1? Sustain power at all costs. Rule 2, refer to Rule 1 in all other cases.
Yeah.
Right? That's it. That's the Vito Corleone School of Leadership. So what's most important is we retain power, and that's to me why this makes sense, is you've got to get a reaction from the United States. We've got to get the great Satan, you know, thing going again, because boys and girls, the people are pissed here, and it ain't going away. They're pissed in Lebanon. They're pissed in Baghdad. We've never seen this kind of shit. And this is how things end, and they don't end well for guys like us. So, to me, that's why you see this. And I would expect to see them do it again.
Well, check this out. But that's exactly how Iran's looking at this. It does not seem to be working out too well, right? And it just seems to me what they cannot do is what we just did, which is find 100 guys and immediately reinforce, and then have a couple thousand more to immediately reinforce. Because if they're going to start mobilizing guard divisions, they're going to have to reach an accommodation with the commanding general about who's paying. Where am I getting it? You see what I'm saying? I mean, we're fast because we don't tolerate a whole lot of – we don't have a low tolerance for corruption inside the system. They've got a high cultural tolerance for corruption. They can't move people as fast as we can because they've got to take every individual unit. They've got to start making some negotiations with them about who's going to pay for what and what exactly we're going to be asked to do. It seems to me – and that's got to be hard for them because they're getting hammered from all ends. I think that they are screwed.
Well, and again, we talked about this, you know, this kind of dovetails or takes us back to the most deadly course of action for the United States relative to Iran post-Saudi refinery attack, which was what? Don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Be restrained. Mm-hmm. Do not give them what they want because, again, just for those of you who don't know, those were not mourners, right? That those were not mourners that went to our embassy over the New Year holiday. Okay,
that's
as Jeff says, those guys could give two shits about a bunch of guys getting whacked at Anbar and or wherever the hell they got whacked, and a bunch of guys getting whacked in Syria. Okay, they did that because they got told to, and their money comes from the guys who told them to do it, which is the IRGC. That's how that shit works. Okay, it is not a coincidence. It is not anything but deliberate choreography for television. The Iraqi statements of get the Americans out of here, right, will be followed with, as soon as the camera goes off, hey, you know I have to do that shit, right? Okay, look, we don't want you guys to go anywhere because you provide stability for us to steal more money. Okay, so we need you here, we want you here, but just understand. I mean, the same shit that we heard in Al Anbar whenever the camera would go on. Right, you're turning the power on. You're rebuilding the schools. You're improving the irrigation system so they can farm. Right, and then the camera goes on. It's like death to America. You need to leave. The infidel needs to leave our country. You know, blah 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 blah. The camera goes off. Okay, where were we? Now, right? And they go back to the negotiation, and that's the same. It's the same fucking bullshit. But I agree with Tim. What Timmy said. The noose is tightening on the IRGC because the Europeans did not come to their rescue after the Saudi thing. So it's interesting. It's interesting.
Like, and Trump guys making us pay our way for NATO.
Well, and again,
we got our own bills. We got our own problems.
We baited him thinking that we can bait him into this thing. But one response has been, you know, was not a response. So we kept drowning in it. The second response has been very measured. Right, and not something that we can exploit, and so he's not playing the game that we want him to play with us. Right.
I saw SB on TV about an hour and a half ago.
I played that.
Yeah, he sounded good, man. I mean, he sounded.
No, I mean, very restrained and measured, yeah. Right? Yeah. So no, I was impressed with both of them. The but again, I think it's I think that it's that restraint that is incredibly important.
Absolutely. Well, I also like how fast he pulled the ambassador, because normally it's a pain in the ass to get the ambassador to leave his embassy. I mean, it took days to get Taylor out of Saigon.
Well, you know, the other thing I think
that guy was out like that.
The other thing I think is it's always this big symbolic move that you know, when the diplomatic staff gets pulled out, right? And you do it right away. Okay, that card's off the table. Now, do you want us to blow the shit? Do you want us to blow the shit out of this place? We're more than willing to do that, right? But again, the whole thing is stagecraft and choreography. The Iraqis stepping aside, you know, that is not something that those sentries did on their own because they didn't feel like shooting them.
Sure.
They got told, hey, these guys are going to show up. Let them through. Got it.
Go back to Solder City and have an extra, you know, an extra non and rice.
They probably got a little extra pay for it too, right? And so, thanks for helping out. Thanks for helping a brother out. And so, again, it was just this, you know, business is normal in Iraq. So that's why I would say at some point in the future, you're going to see another Iranian provocation. And Iran needs the great Satan to get fired up again. It does not need a great Satan that isn't behaving like the great Satan.
I think he said that last summer.
Yeah.
Exact same words.
Yeah. It doesn't work for them. So, I mean, to me, that's what I find really, really interesting about this. And at what point do you get a tipping point? And if you hear the president's statement, who did he talk to? He talked to the Iranian people, right? And he talked to the Iraqi people. Do not let these people hijack your government. The Iranian government is attempting to manipulate you, right? Do not let them do that. So I thought that was pretty interesting, too. Anyway.
The guy has no respect, and I don't mean this as a criticism, I mean it as a compliment, respect for the traditions of the U.S. government. It doesn't seem to impress him that he's the third guy to get impeached, you know? He's like, whatever, I still got a job to do. He compartmentalizes, and I think the rest of the national leadership across the world, they're like, we never saw a guy like this. Like President Obama said, President Obama is apparently back in Elizabeth Warren for president. To me, it's totally predictable. He was a figurehead. He's basically, President Obama was, he's basically run by, you know, the big apparatus of government and media and everything. He's the representative of that. And so it doesn't really matter what he does because he never really did anything, you know, except try to maintain status quo, not really solve any problems. He figures having a woman president do the same thing. President Trump, though, he labors under the delusion that he's actually expected to improve problems. And so he tries, you know, and he succeeds most of the time. And he's, you know, this is flummoxing these people. Like what you were saying, Mac, they're kind of believing their own the propaganda about Trump being a wild man and all this stuff. And, you know, but really he's not acting that way. He's acting very measured. He's using his resources according to their capabilities, like we're all supposed to do, like they train us. Use your men according, your Marines according to their capabilities, and he's actually doing that. And so,
well, you know, the other interesting
master chess game.
Yeah, the other, and that's what it is. And so, but he's played his whole life game, his own life like this, right? And so this is just. But to me, what's interesting, and I'm curious to see how the trade deal with China, you know, now the United States has kind of, you know, tightened, you know, the necktie around China's throat. And now, in my opinion, it was pretty predictable that you would see some kind of a deal or steps in that direction as we get towards the election year. Okay? I think that's important, that the American economy has to do well. If the American economy does well, you don't see the president get replaced. So to me, it's pretty predictable. But the president has been pretty disciplined in not saying, I won't make a deal that doesn't serve the American people. Now, he's a politician at heart, so we know that everybody who gets elected speaks that they lie, right? They're politicians. So the question is, if it's not a good deal, will you see it walk back? Will you see it stopped? Because he's played very much out of character in that role. People, you know, said, oh, Trump this, Trump that, Trump this, Trump that. But to me, what he's done in the Pacific relative to China is what the world needed the United States to do relative to China. And so I think it's very interesting, and I'm curious to see, as this deal comes to market, what does it look like? What did we settle for? Blah, 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 blah.
You know what's interesting about that is, I voted for Trump. I'm very comfortable with how things are going. I would rather have Madison Kelly still involved, but it seems to be going well. But I know what you're talking about relative to China only because I listened to Grant Newsom. That's the only reason I would know. And I'm a pretty heavy consumer of contemporary news. I don't know how many people even know what we're talking about when we talk about how this is going to all end up. And the only reason I have a comfort factor at all on it is because of Grant Newsom. And that's, I find that kind of amusing, you know, but I'm confident in that what my read on it is accurate.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but again, it's the president who's kind of, he didn't listen or he listened to very few people on, relative to China. Right. Oh, and he was making all the wrong calls relative to China. And all of a sudden you look up and it's like, wait a minute, the American economy has been doing great. And holy shit, this is going good, right? It couldn't be going better for the United States. You know, our economy hitting new highs, and now China's agreed to, you know, to take more, you know, farm goods, which helps the farmers, right? And so, but again, I want to see what the deal looks like. So, you know, it's one thing to press your negotiating position. It's another thing to actually push it all the way through, and we'll see where that goes. But again, I mean, if any indication of what Iran is in store for, you know, if China is any bellwether for that, and we need China, you know, we don't need Iran. And I'll be curious to see, you know, how, you know, if he continues to prosecute, the most dangerous course of action would be, you know, to find ways, whether it be, you know, cyber warfare that are out of the public eye that allow us to keep strangling the Iranian economy, put the regime at risk, and not have to endure an outcry from the rest of the world, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think that's the most deadly course of action.
Yeah, Iran has all kind of Iranian expatriates living in the United States and England, and they're there making money, here making money.
Right.
And they're contacting their folks back home. They're ingenious. It's one thing about them. They're always, just like Timmy was saying, they're mercantile. You know, they're talented, you know, merchants. And so they're not a religious monolith. You know, like they like to, like the news media tries to portray them a lot of times. There's a lot of things going on there. And you guys bringing up about the money, I didn't really know that, about those generals being invested. It makes total sense. So their position is not, I don't want to be Pollyannish and saying, well, you got a dick, you know. But the truth is, our adversary here is not the strong monolith that the news media feels comfortable portraying them as and has since 1979. They're not.
Yeah,
and I get the sense we're going to get four more years of Trump, not because anybody's really paying a lot of attention to this, because if you're watching CNN, those were, or who was it, the New York Times or Washington Post called them mourners.
Yeah.
I mean,
New York
and
Times.
We're seeing, right, and that doesn't last a half hour in today's media environment before that gets called out too. But I think what we're all saying is the day of the mullah is going to pass, and I think it's going to happen sooner rather than later. That's my sense of it.
Well, I'll tell you, I think what's really interesting is what's going on in Lebanon. And we'll see how far that goes. But, you know, look, that whole part of the world has been kept impoverished and exploited when they have some of the richest shit in the world underneath them. And the average person doesn't, you know, their boat doesn't rise. And in an age where communication flows more freely than ever, right?
Yeah.
What's the one thing that you see them do in Iran, right, when things get shitty? The first thing they do is they shut off the internet.
Yeah.
The first thing they do. So to me, as both of you guys have said, you can only suppress that for so long, you know, until there comes a point when they say, yeah, fuck this, we're not good with it anymore. And so I think, you know, every day goes by, comes closer. And, you know, we talked about, you know, it was much written about the Arab Spring, right? Well, at some point, it's going to actually spring. And the feudalism, right, that sits atop the Middle East is going to go away. It just will. It is the march of time, and the fuel for that is free-flowing information and the hatred that pulses through the veins of patriots that say, I'm not going to live like this. I'm not going to go out like this. And that's what you're seeing in Lebanon, where they're saying, look, we don't have schools, we don't have hospitals, we don't have shit. Like, what is going on here? And so to question, you know, just the ruling establishment as it's been on both sides, the Christian and the Shiite, actually. So anyway, go ahead.
You know something else I just thought of. There's got to be tens of thousands of AFN decoders in circulation out there. I mean, I had four or five of them over the years.
Explain what you're talking about.
AFN decoder is the Armed Forces network. If you get a satellite dish and you aim it to the bird, you know which bird you're looking for, you get, I think, six or seven different channels of American television with Pentagon news. There's no regular commercials. It's all AFN commercials. Normally irritating guys in Europe talking up. They can be irritating at any rate. But those things would get, I mean, contractors, anybody on base that had a cat cord could get one. They were highly valued in the civilian market. So when you're leaving, lots of people would give it to the Afghans that they've been working with. They give those things out. But there's got to be 10,000, 20,000 of those damn things. So I know there's some in Iran. There has to be. Yeah. You know, so they can shut off the internet all they want to. But those guys, all they need is a satellite dish to pick up the right bird, and they're watching American television.
But as Jeff said, you go ahead and you do that. And then what they do is they get phone calls from relatives who tell them why you need to, and trying to work out deals of, you know, how do I get grandma here? So if we get your grandma here, then you can come here, you know, and they're not, I mean, you cannot suppress that shit. And that's to me what's going to be interesting about this. Cause again, as we said before, the most deadly course of action is American restraint. Is American strength, so we'll see.
I want to add one thing on top of that, and that is that up until this time, we have not done moderate Islam any favors at all, because we've allowed the more radicalized elements to define the conversation for us. We couldn't even name the enemy during the Obama administration, and the guys working to try to mitigate their conflicts with the Islamic community and us were not moderate Islamic people. Moderate Islamic people are banned, are nominated by the Southern Poverty Law Center as bigots and terrorists. That's right. What's been happening until very recently.
It's insane. You're right. You're absolutely right. It's true. It's insane that's going on.
And we have not recognized the moderated influences because, I mean, there's a case to be made. But right now, if you're Islamic and if you're a Muslim and you don't believe in the entire package, and you're suspect by definition, you know, we got relaxed about the shellfish and stuff over the years. They haven't done that. And they're not going to until we empower the moderating influencers. And there's not many people doing that right now still to this day.
You know, Tim is so right. I can't back him up enough, because the truth is that the terrorists and people who are murdering Jewish people and Americans, for that matter, they're following the tenets that are laid out in the Quran and the Hadith. It's like we're all Catholic, but my guess is you guys are about as good a Catholic as me. So, but part of you feels guilty when somebody's...
I'm not that bad.
Somebody's not eating meat on Friday. I feel like I shouldn't be eating meat on Friday, but I do. And they're going to church every Sunday. I should be going to church every Sunday.
Twice.
The Muslim guy who's killing
twice.
Jews...
Once on Saturday and twice on Sunday, for God's sake.
But you know what I'm saying? That's how... It's like the Uncle Tom syndrome with black people sometimes. A guy who's like real hardcore anti... you know, they don't really criticize the guy because, you know, they feel like they'll be called Uncle Tom. They'll be kowtowing to the white man. And the same thing with the Muslims, where a guy who's like doing all this stuff, fomenting hate. That's what Muhammad tells him to do. He doesn't say get along with everybody. He says treat them like crap. You know what I mean? Charge them money if they live in your area. If you have to lie and pretend that you like to do it. You know, so they're actually doing what they're with the hadith and what the Quran says. And we just kind of go along with that. We're not being intelligent about it, just like Timmy is saying.
Yeah, and it got so bad, Mac. Remember when you first started this show, I think a British soldier had his head cut off in public. And I told you the first thing the police are going to do is monitor social media for anybody making derogatory statements about Muslims or Islamic people. That was their first response. And you said back then, bullshit. And I said, dude, here, I'll send you the link. So we're not that bad. But Europe's that bad, and there's parts of this country where it could get that bad, and I think now, only now, do we have countervailing forces, and believe it or not, it started on the Bill Maher show with Sam Harris, who I find kind of annoying but smart, was talking about Islamic terrorist problems in a very forthright manner in defense of moderate Islams, and who was that damn actor?
Ben Affleck. Is it Ben Affleck?
Ben Affleck, who probably was doing roids to get up for a show or something. Ben Affleck goes crazy on him and basically validates every point he just made, and only then has the conversation shifted towards, hey, there's moderate Islamic people. Maybe we should give them a voice, because officially they had no voice in our government or in Europe. No voice at all.
Right. I mean, it's the Council for the CAIR, CAIR. They're just awful. You know, and immediately, we have more Muslim extremists living in America now than we did when 9/11 happened. Brought in, treated with kid gloves. It's insane.
All right, boys.
Yeah.
What? Any final words on what do you expect to see next? All right. So, if we walk the dog on this stuff, 100 Marines to the embassy in Baghdad, and the ambassador evacuated, 700 a battalion essentially of 82nd Airborne dudes headed that direction. What do you expect to see next if you were from the IRGC, from the government of Iraq, and then from the IRGC?
I expect them to put a lot of pressure on the Iraqi government to start demanding that we lessen our footprint there. In other words, they've shown like a kind of a preview that of what could happen and get a lot worse. So now they'll lean on because it doesn't work leaning on President Trump. But it might work leaning on the Iraqi government, which is Shia and which is also, you know, beholden in a lot of ways to the Iranian militias, Iranian-backed militias. They're the ones who did most of the dying and crying when it came to throwing ISIS out. And so, you know, that's a factor. I think they'll use that to have them start putting more pressure on us. I mean, that's the best case scenario. The worst case is they ramp up the attacks, and the next time there's an attack on the embassy, it's AKs and RPGs and stuff. And it might not be the embassy; it might be one of those, you know, enclaves in the other provinces that are there ostensibly to help tamp down ISIS, which really isn't an issue anymore.
All right, Timmy, what do you think? What's the government of Iraq do? What does the IRGC do in response to this American restrained response?
I think the government of Iraq is going to play ball with us based on what the president said on New Year's Day. I have no other knowledge of it than that. I think the Iranians, if they were smart, would back off and try to figure out why they can't predict the outcome of these events anymore and hope that Trump is defeated next year. What they might try to do along those lines is to help him be defeated by trying to deliver a debacle and I don't think they're going to be able to do it as easily as they once did. We don't just lay ourselves out in the Beirut International Airport and put up a strand of concertina and call that secure anymore. That's not how we operate. And we certainly can make it expensive if they make a try for us. If they do make a try, they're going to take a lot of casualties in those militias. And if our attention is now focused on those militias like it appears to be, they're going to take a lot of the casualties in those militias anyway. I think they're screwed. I think that the pressure is going to make them do something stupid, and they're going to have problems with the internal unrest. That's where they're vulnerable. And as long as we can keep the squeeze on them financially, I think this is going to be a hell of a good year for us.
Yeah, I think the Iraqi government knows that they need the United States there for some stability. And I don't think the Iraqi government is comfortable saying, yeah, get the fuck out of here, for their own survival. And so I think you'll see, like we've seen in the past, the great protestation to include something happened in Parliament. But in the end of the day, nothing will happen. And Americans will get back channeled that information. Hey, you know, we're playing charades here, right? So just please allow us to do this. We have to save face with our Arab neighbors and shit like that, so we don't look like your bitch, okay? And then what I believe is the RGC, you know, is from the things they've done, which is actually executing an attack that they knew would be traced to them on, you know, 50% of the Saudi refining capability. That comes with huge risk. That's a huge dice roll. We're looking possibly to inch towards war, although we won't allow it to get that far because we know we would get annihilated. But, and so you're watching that. So to me, what that betrays is they believe the franchise is getting at risk. And I believe what's happened in Lebanon, what's happened in Baghdad, and what's not in terms of the embassy, but the protests, and what's happening internally has got them considering measures that they would not normally execute in order to get the great Satan to act like the great Satan. So I think you're going to see a bigger version in the future of what we saw in terms of an attack on America.
And they cannot put pressure on us with the oil. We're energy independent now, so they can close the Strait of Hormuz. That hurts China. Doesn't hurt us.
Right. No, that's a fact. That's a fact.
Jeff? The fact that the U.S. government and consequently the media are flat out naming, they're saying Kitab Hezbollah. That's the no kidding Shiite Iranian backed bunch.
Right.
And the fact that's out there now, they're not just generally saying, you know, the shadowy Iran-based militia groups. They're saying it, Kitab Hezbollah. And so that kind of defines the enemy right there, you know, which is, I think that's, and no one's pushing back on that. So.
Right, no.
Also known as mourners in certain enclaves.
Yeah. mourners and politically aware Arabs.
Yeah, all right. All right, boys. Well, first of all, Happy New Year to both you guys. And
yeah, you too.
Yeah, yeah. Have a good week. And saw those pictures of your son, Jeff. Well done.
Yeah, they're all hot. They're all up and happy and everything. Told their brother we picked them up. They said, they call him on the phone. They go, Kent here, pick us up, like, sooner than now. And because we don't know. And so they got picked up. They got back home. They said, look, Chris, don't tell your mom. Don't tell your mom. So as soon as they walked in, we kicked. Yeah.
That is funny, man. Those aren't good pictures. From hitting
Chris. Can't figure out who raised them.
Hold on, that's Chris and who? Is that Chris and Tim?
No, that was Tim and Nick. Chris was the elder. He wasn't Tim.
That's funny. Cool, man.
Yeah. All right.
One of them is a 1-6 and 2-4 veterans.
There you go. Continuing to set a great example in our communities across the country. The
second first Mardiv.
There you go. A grand total of 2/3 of the Marine divisions on the world. All right. Thanks, guys. Have a great one.
Yeah. All right, brother. Take
there
care.
You have it. That is Tim Lynch and Jeff Kenney. Let me read you a couple emails here. Mac, it's always interesting to hear you guys. And I can't believe at this point nobody from a major media outlet has contacted any of you to come on and talk. This discussion is so deep relative to an understanding. I really enjoyed your guys' discussion of if you're seeing it, it's a choreographed event. That makes so much sense to me. Well, I mean, we've all lived it, right? We've all lived it and we've seen it, that you're standing there watching it and you're seeing the charade that goes on, but yet it goes back to the American people, and the American people think it's real. And the Iraqis, they don't give a shit about that, but they know that if they don't do that, somebody will come and put a bullet in their head. If they stood up, if they went on TV and told the truth, like, yeah, we don't give a shit about those guys. Blow the hell out of them every, you know, 8 days a week. Right? Somebody show up, somebody would find them. Hey, who knows this guy? Oh, that's Ahmed from, 32nd Street. Yeah, Ahmed and everybody in his family would have bullets in their head. So you play the game. You play the game. Because that's where your money comes from. That's how your bread's buttered. That's how you get a house. That's how you live. So, yeah. Yeah. So it's an interesting chess game going on that Iran is attempting to play, but the United States continues to beat Iran by not jumping at the bait. And so, well done. Well done. And again, it's like a boa constrictor slowly but surely crushing the life out of something. That's the analogy that I would use. Right? And if the boa constrictor gets distracted, loses its grip and goes and does something else, then you've not done the most deadly thing. And I do believe that the IRGC, and the discussion, I didn't like Timmy and Jeff, I didn't know anything about their business interests and how they were sustained after the Iran-Iraq war, and that was to give them businesses and parts of the economy that now they run. So, I mean, they're in. If the, in for a penny, in for a pound, right? So why would the IRGC care if guys have to die in Iraq in order for them to, brew up the great Satan again? The answer is they don't give two shits. So anyway, but it's interesting. It's interesting. Here's another one. Mac, what an interesting discussion. Thoroughly enjoyed the last hour. Well done. I am now going to be the smartest guy in my office today when this thing comes up, because we have been talking about it for most of the morning. I can't wait to go participate at lunch. Thank you. I'm going to hammer some people at lunch. Hey, let me just tell you, it's just the truth, right? All right, if you're just tuning in, Jeff alluded to remarks that the Secretary of Defense made, Mark Esper. You're going to hear those in hour one. So you'll hear the opening, you'll hear the Secretary of Defense, his comments from early this morning about who was deploying, where they were going, what they were doing, what the United States was trying to effect. So you'll hear that. And then in hour two, you'll hear, if you're just walking in on the end of this, you'll hear the entire Lynch Kenny event, and I'll get that up on the website here in the next 30 minutes. So, have a great day. Happy New Year to everybody. And make a resolution to go change somebody's life. Yeah, I think that would be entirely fitting and appropriate. And if you're looking to lose weight, go to the podcast page, type in Chris Cox, and Chris went from 500 pounds to 236. Okay, 500 to 236, and he has some pretty simple. He's a pretty straight line guy doing it. The other thing I would tell you is everybody here has heard of, right, Tsunami Lady, Libby, right? They had a tragedy in their extended family, and they had one of Libby's nieces passed away. She's the mother of five. So keep them in your thoughts and prayers. And that shouldn't happen to anybody. She passed away on Christmas Day. So their family will deal with that. So if you're in the habit to pray or keep people in your thoughts, do that. I know they'd appreciate it. So on a Thursday that feels like a Monday, have a great day. I'm off to Miramar to do audio checks, to do post-traumatic winning tomorrow. Fired up. So have a great day on a Thursday. All Marine Radio, over and out.